This is Marketplace. I'm Kai Rizdahl. When you think about the past decade, maybe two decades, there's just a handful of companies that have really had outsized influence on the way we live. Amazon, yes, for sure. Uber, Apple, and Facebook, too. Also, Netflix. It took out Blockbuster. It pretty much invented the streaming model that everybody in Hollywood, from Disney to HBO to NBC, is chasing. Reed Hastings is the co-founder. He's the chairman and the co-CEO of Netflix, and he is also now an author. His book out today is called No Rules Rules, Netflix and the Culture of Reinvention. Reed Hastings, welcome to the program.
Thank you so much.
I read somewhere as I was preparing for this talk that you have said you knew back in like 1996, 97, in the days of red envelopes and DVDs going out, you knew that this is where this company was going to wind up, delivering nonlinear television or content over the internet. Is that true?
How lucky can one person get? In 1988, I got a job. No, 1986. In 1986, I got a job serving coffee as a first job in a computer company. And it happened to be the very first .com ever. And in that company, I learned so much about the internet that by the time we started Netflix in 1997, I realized the internet was going to continue to get faster and faster and eventually be able to do television. And so, yes, we knew, and DVD was a temporary option for us, and it worked very well.
Yeah, clearly it did. I would say so. Much has been written and said about how much money this company spends on getting those new shows and new content. And I wonder, of the things that keep you up at night running this globally influential company, where does the amount of money you have to shell out for content rank?
You know, we're spending this year about $15 billion developing new content, so it is quite a lot. And we're very thankful that then our subscribers watch all of our content and then, you know, send us 10 bucks a month to be able to fund even more content development.
But the beautiful part, it seems to me, of Netflix and honestly your competitors as well, but let's talk about you, is that it almost, yes, it's great to have the hits, right? Like The Crown and all the rest of them. But it almost doesn't matter because you have what you have called unlimited airtime, right? You can keep it in the back catalog and people will keep coming back for it. And that seems like a great luxury and competitive advantage.
You know, the internet has that infinite shelf space aspect that makes it able to support really broad selection. And so that's what empowers us to have a huge variety of shows, depending on whatever country you live in.
Can we talk for a second about this book that you've written? And I want to dig into it the way I think you intended it to be read, which is a discussion of, yes, Netflix, but also how you run this company and the company culture. It is famously described as, cutthroat is probably pejorative, but it's harsh and does not tolerate second-rate performers. And you've been really candid about it, right? I mean, you released the whole PowerPoint deck on it 8-10 years ago. You're writing a book about it now. Do you worry that Netflix, for all of its successes, suffers from its reputation as a really difficult place to work?
If you look at the employee satisfaction studies, we rank at the very top. The people who work at Netflix love it. It may not be for everyone, but for 300 years, people have built companies to be like factories, very top-down, very efficiency-oriented. And now there's a lot of creative work, where instead of supervising employees, which is the factory way, we look to get them to create new concepts, and we manage on the edge of chaos. But the benefit of that is great creativity, which is what's helped us adapt from the DVD era forward.
Who gets to decide in this company? I mean, you famously took on Ted Sarandos, who used to be chief content guy, and he's now the co-CEO with you. Who makes the decisions in this company?
So a perfect quarter for me would be a quarter where I've made no decisions. I've only influenced people. I've advocated. I've inspired. I've learned. We don't do by command. That's sort of the factory era. We do by influence.
I'm so interested in this factory era comparison because yes, we're transitioning to a knowledge economy and things are changing and creators now are so important, but it can't work everywhere in this economy, right?
Correct. And any part of the economy that's around mass replication with very little variance, like creating antibiotics, things that are safety critical, like airlines and hospitals, you want to be very process oriented. Then there's what used to be a very small sector of the economy, the creative sector, but now growing, where it's fundamentally about ideas and generating, stimulating human creativity.
Last thing, Reed, and then I'll let you go. And it gets us back to the beginning of this conversation where you, as first mover in the space, you know, took out Blockbuster, right? Who are you worried about? Who's your competition? Are you worried about getting Netflixed, I guess?
YouTube, TikTok, augmented reality. I think we'll do pretty well against Disney and HBO. We're all going to be in it for a long time. The threats that get you are often the substitution threats, the things that you really didn't spend a lot of time on. And so those are the ones that we worry about in the long term.
Reed Hastings is the founder, the chairman, the co-CEO now of Netflix. He's got a new book out about that company, how he runs it, and what its culture is. It's called No Rules Rules, Netflix and the Culture of Reinvention. Reed, thanks a lot. I appreciate your time.
It's an honor. Thank you, Kyle.
We've got an excerpt from Reed Hastings' new book about the time he offered to sell Netflix to Blockbuster for $50 million, which, looking back, would have been a great deal for Blockbuster, right? It's at marketplace.org.